and welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey Podcast. I'm Matt Sommer, one of your hosts, and with me as always is Jay Kinney and Jillian Carlson. Super excited today to have with us for episode 29, Lauren LeBlanc. Lauren is a longtime athlete of mine that has risen from just a normal age group athlete to what I would consider a pretty elite age group athlete. So super excited about having Lauren on the podcast today. She's a full-time cardiology PA and balances work, life, and racing. So she is the epitome of what an age group triathlete is. Jay, Jillian, and I, we do the same. We're everyday people that try to juggle life, training, parenthood, work, and every other curveball that's thrown at us on a day-to-day basis. So, Jay, Jillian, how you guys doing today?
Good. Matt, as you know, I'm actually just upstairs in your house out here in North Carolina. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's training camp 2023. Hot, humid. I am loving every second of it. I think, yeah, going outside and you don't have to work that hard and you can sweat like you have worked really hard. So it feels like you're doing something.
Definitely a good weekend for heat acclimation. We're in the 90s with like close to 100% humidity, and between the air quality and everything else, I'm sure it's good for the body.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll regret it on my off the bike run tomorrow, but so far enjoying it. And yeah, surprised you guys are having the air quality and the smoke. So took it indoors on the run today, and you did yesterday as well, just because the smoke is drifting down out here, which is interesting because back in the Pacific Northwest, usually we have really bad smoke issues, but right now we're actually sitting a little bit clean and we haven't had the wildfires come through yet. So
we were actually a code red yesterday afternoon. Yeah. And I was talking with one of my athletes that's up in the Chicago area, and she was saying that Chicago was actually ranked having the worst air quality in the world yesterday. Yeah. She had done her bike inside, went for a walk with her dogs outside afterwards, and when she came back, she actually had a thin film on her skin that she could wipe away. They were urging everybody to wear masks. I mean, we could smell the smoke yesterday when we were just going for a walk yesterday afternoon. So it's crazy to think what it's up in the Northeast. So
Felt like we were out camping. And definitely it's one of those ones that you just don't chance. And so if you have the ability to take your workouts indoor, definitely want to do that. So anyhow, it's been fun. And I'll be out here until we actually fly on the 4th of July and head back to the Pacific Northwest and some cooler, maybe cooler temperatures. But
that's my heat training because I have air conditioning. She doesn't.
That's true.
That's my heat training. When I go back there, that's like, all right.
Yeah. All the fans. He's looking for more fans.
I'm keeping wet towels next to the bed because I'm hot natured. I'm like sitting there just putting wet towels on me to keep me cool.
It's the cooling towels that you would use on race day. I have to keep next to the bed for him because he's
two things that make me grumpy are being hot and being hungry.
There you go.
So, true story.
Yeah.
Here's your new shirt.
Absolutely.
Wear that.
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Jay?
Well, I mean, 46 years of life, I've never had to deal with forest fire smoke like this. So that's definitely been a new one for me. And this week, I started the week at scout camp with my son in eastern Pennsylvania. No smoke, but we had constant thunderstorms. And this was not cabin camping at camp. It was tent camping at camp. So you kind of just late at night hoping the trees next to you don't fall on you during the lightning storms. But everything went well. He's still there. He comes home tomorrow. And then I left Wednesday, flew to Milwaukee, entered the smoke zone in Milwaukee. It was pretty bad up there. It was worse than I'd ever seen here in Baltimore. And then until I flew home to Baltimore, and it was just as bad. So we are definitely dealing with it. But hey, you wouldn't know it. This was supposed to be a taper week because I'm racing on Sunday at Happy Valley, 70.3.
Nice.
The complete opposite type race of Eagle Man's. Lots of climbing in this one. And I am so far from mentally prepared for this. I'll be honest that it didn't feel like race week because I was so busy between running from scouts to the work trip. And then today at work, I barely obviously made it to the podcast on time to record today. And yeah, I guess I got to pack tonight, leave tomorrow morning and get the bike set up. It's a two transition race. Right. So that always has the fun logistics of checking in and the bags and getting all that done. And since I'm showing up Saturday right before the race, I got to do it all when I get there and
right.
Wind down and hopefully get some rest.
Right. So, how long's that drive?
It's about 2.5 hours, so it's not too bad. And there's going to be quite a lot of podcast alumni in this race. Andy Holland is racing. I think Andy's got a chance to podium for sure, and maybe give Joe a run. Joe Klondike is he's not been a guest, but he is the nemesis of my age group. So hopefully Andy can give him a run. Andy will definitely outswim him, and then he'll just have to hold on from there. And so we'll see. Chris Violante, who we interviewed, he'll be up there. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
I've got two athletes racing up there as well.
Oh, awesome. Who do you have?
Mark Weiss and Robin. Well, she just got married. Robin Arthur was her previous name, but not sure if she's gone with the new married name or if she's staying with that one yet. But yeah, so two of them.
Yeah. And last week's guest, Jason
Cole,
he's going up to watch the race. And he reached out to me. He's like, I'll yell out splits, do whatever you need. And I said, just tell me I look good, man. That's all I care about.
Lie to me and tell me you love me.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Hey, I do want to give a big shout out to one of our previous guests as well. Amanda Ahman had the race of her life at Steelhead over the weekend. First overall female. She was strong on that run. I mean, I was tracking her throughout the day and she showed up. She swam strong. She biked smart and she threw down on the run. So Amanda, huge congratulations to you. You know, we were watching and following. So great job to you and the rest of your TS2 teammates. So you guys all showed up and had a great race. So super proud of you. But
congrats.
Really awesome.
What do you guys say we get going? I got a good quote for the week.
All right.
Kind of struggle. This week was all about ambition. And this one's pretty simple, plain, short, and sweet. But ambition without action is simply a fantasy.
Why do you got to make me think about this, Matt?
I mean, you got to think about it. People talk all the time. They say they want to do something. They talk about it. That's a dream. It's a fantasy. Until you put action behind it, means nothing. It's meaningless. We can talk all day. You can say you want to do this. You can say in your life, oh, it'd be nice to do this. Until you put your habits behind it and put action behind it, it's all talk. So ambition without action is simply a fantasy.
Yep.
I love it. Ambition requires ownership and you have to deliver. For some reason, Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, popped in my head because I think some people believe it's luck. You know, you're so lucky that you've made out in life or reached a certain level or done something. But really, we all know their ambition, their work to obtain what they ultimately earned, in my opinion, it's rarely luck. Now, some would say there might be luck of when they were born, luck when they were a part of the culture or something. But the reality is, I think it still requires the ambition, requires the ownership to work your tail off to make it happen.
I needed to pull this up real quick. And one of my favorite motivational videos out there is the Rise and Shine motivational video. And I've shared this with a lot of my athletes. It's my go-to on race morning. And one of the quotes out of that is, luck is the last dying wish of those who want to believe that winning can happen by accident. Sweat, on the other hand, is for those who know it's a choice. And I get chills. I mean, that whole motivational video gets me. But when you started talking about luck, Jay, I mean, I keep that one handy because I like to read that when people go, oh, they're lucky. It's like, no, it's sweat. You know what I mean? It's showing up every day, putting the work in and choosing to lead by example.
Yeah. Been a while since we've let you have two quotes.
I know. I try to sneak them in there. I'm pretty nifty about it, aren't I? Got to slide it in. So, Lauren, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I'm going to slide in a third quote that you said that kind of goes with all this, because that's when I started training with you. I think it was on like the TriDot Facebook group or something about you can't be upset about the results you didn't get with the work you didn't do. And that just struck a chord with me, because I think at that time I was pretty like frustrated with my 5K and You know, I want to be faster, but I'm not faster, or I want this, or, you know, and then I realized, you know, I was skating out of my Z2 heart rate runs, or and I was doing a lot of work on the bike, but there's just certain things that I was not paying attention to and not focused on. And not giving myself the best opportunity that I had. And so when you posted that, and that reminds me a lot of this quote, because if you know, you can want a million things, but unless you're willing to sort of do the work or be focused enough and driven enough to actually buckle down and do those things, then it's never going to happen.
Cool. All right.
Love it.
Well, what do you say we jump on in and talk with Lauren a little bit? Sound good?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, as I mentioned kind of in the intro, with us today is Lauren Le Badass LeBlanc. That's her nickname I gave her a while ago. But, you know, Lauren is a full-time cardiology PA, married, two children, both young. She's living the life. She works full-time and really does balance training. She's a two-time 70.3 World Championship qualifier. She's been with TriDot for quite some time. This past year, she was fortunate enough to make it onto the Octagon Team Elite. So she's one of the few members on there. And, you know, if you see her at the races, you better be looking over your shoulder because she's coming for you. So, well, Lauren, welcome. Happy to have you on the pod.
Thank you. Happy to be here. And I think I saw you guys after 70.3 Worlds in St. George the night you were first recording your first podcast. Now I'm here with you guys. It's awesome.
Yeah. Exciting. So tell us, obviously, you've been doing triathlon for some time now, but you didn't always start out as a triathlete. I mean, you kind of came from a running and swimming background, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your introduction to the sport and what led you to triathlon rather than just single sport disciplines.
I think like many people, like repetitive run injuries. So I swam in high school and I loved swimming, you know, and I swam sometimes in the summer. I was never super fast, but I got along okay and always loved being in the water. I started running in junior high, actually was on our cross country team and same thing, loved running and just those like few miles every day. It was my time, I guess. And then going through college, I did keep running here and there. It wasn't until I actually got into PA school that I ran my first marathon. And everybody thought I was nuts to be in PA school and training for my first marathon. But I guess that's the way I go. So, I loved it. I loved the distance and the sort of, I guess, grit or whatever it took to sort of get to that finish line. And then those finish lines are intoxicating because you can't believe that you did it. But I did suffer from some glute medius issues. And then I had a couple really bad sprains with like partial tears of different tendons down in my ankle. And so I started actually going to the gym and just doing some bike workouts. You know, well, I'm just going to do an hour spin on this, whatever spin bike in the gym. And then I'll swim because I can't run. So I have to do something else. And then at some point, it just kind of dawned on me like, maybe I should do this triathlon because I can swim and not really a cyclist, but I can ride a bike and then hopefully I can kind of hold myself together for the run. And I did like a sprint, like in kind of a local neighborhood, but it was just a sprint triathlon. And I signed up literally the night before the race. I had a Trek hybrid, like road bike, not even a road bike, just like a Trek hybrid, you know, whatever, $200 bike. And I bought tow cages because I thought that would be like a triathlon. Stopped at REI and, you know, spent a couple hundred bucks on apparel or a water bottle and showed up. And I just remember being so happy out there, you know, and being on the bike. And it was just this constant change of challenge. And so then I was in it and I bought spent about $1,000 on my Fuji road bike, aluminum frame. Just kind of from there, I did it for a couple of years. I did go to age group championships back in 2014 and then took a little break, obviously, having kids. And it kind of dawned on me, you know, when they were like three, I was just feeling unhealthy, unmotivated, and I needed something to get me going. And then I saw the ad actually for the TriDot preseason project. And I thought, what better way than a couple months of free training? And I guess the rest is history after that. So
nice.
That's fantastic. Can you talk about your re-entry at this point? Then, you know, you have young children.
Yes.
And trying to reprogram you and the family through this lifestyle. What's that like?
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, when I got back into it, they were still pretty little, like three, you know, and they're close in age. And they have, they still don't sleep through the night. So sleep's a premium. But I am happy to see them seeing me be healthy. And it's also like my special time, right? So I'm a better person and I feel like happier and I have more energy when I'm doing these things. And when I first started, it was really just about like getting back in shape and kind of finding my old self a little bit again. As I got into it, and then I started getting a little stronger on the bike, or then one day I just decided I needed to do a half Ironman. So I signed up for Steelhead as like a bucket list, one and done. Just, I needed to do one of those in my life. Obviously, the more I got into it and the more that I get into it, the more, I mean, you guys know, right? It's a good hole to be in, but it's definitely, when you're in it, you're in it. And I love it. And the kids know now and they see me on Zwift. And like, if I'm on Zwift, they assume I'm racing and they want to know why these people are passing me or if I'm passing others. And they push my legs up and down. They're like, you need to go faster. You know, they sit on the side of the treadmill or Finn will grab some weights and he'll do push-ups and armbands and all that kind of stuff. And I think, it's really great for them to see that and just to be sort of immersed in that lifestyle without, you know, and there's no pressure, but they did a little kids duathlon at the Grand Rapids Triathlon, last week. And it was so cute. You know, they're both out there, ride their bikes and then sprinting around, you know, half a mile with helmets on. So that's a new style. But it's not always easy for sure. And I mean, there's so many people who are parents or who take care of their parents or just have other things outside of triathlon. But it's also that like hour or two where it's mine, you know, and makes me a better person.
And Lauren, one other thing that's, I think, unique about you, too, is you've actually had the opportunity to be, were you a guide? Is that the right way to
for
someone? So how did that come about and what's that like?
I met the Bakke family from, actually, I was on Team Zoop prior to being on Octagon Elite. They have two sons who are 20s and both autistic. And they are just phenomenal people. And I just right away, I feel like we took to each other. And they both, you know, they would guide the boys for different races. They've trained them. Christian, their son, is nonverbal and has now done two marathons. And he's running New York City Marathon. And can you imagine never being able to complain about your training to somebody? Jake, he'll ride a tandem with his dad at 70.3. So he does some triathlon stuff, but he is also a bit faster. And they wanted, they're adults. And so they wanted to kind of be able to give them more opportunity to be out there with somebody besides mom and dad. And so I happily sort of took up those reins when I can. And I've done a couple 5Ks with Jake, and he also has type 1 diabetes. So it does require monitoring his sugars while you're running and making sure he doesn't drop and, giving him, you know, a gel or whatever that he needs. And I don't know, he and I just really get along and it's been really fun. So I've done a couple. I was supposed to do one this spring, but I was injured. But I really enjoy the whole family and both the boys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I follow them on Instagram, and the stories are really inspiring to watch, and how excited they are to race. You can really see it.
They love it.
They love it.
It makes you remember like why you do what you do, or to enjoy every piece of it, because you can totally tell when they're out there how much and how fun they are, how much fun they're having, and how much they enjoy doing what they're doing. Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, of course. Oh.
So one of the things I want to talk about, Lauren, is kind of your rise. When we kind of got to know each other in, I guess it was like February of 2021, you had signed up for Steelhead. And I just remember talking with you. You were like, hey, I want to do this. And I remember not too long after that, I kind of was like, I think you got something here. And I mentioned, I think you could qualify for Worlds. And I think that kind of shocked you, if I recall. I remember you kind of being like, huh, what are you talking about? From a coaching side, and when you see certain numbers and you see certain things, it's like, that's the hand you're bringing to the table. So every once in a while, an athlete presents themselves, you see this raw data, and you know, all of a sudden, you're like, you got something, a gift that if handled correctly, you can execute and you can get this qualification or earn these achievements. I remember being a little daunted by that. Obviously, you went to Steelhead, You qualified. That made you thirsty, didn't it? I mean, is that your first taste of success that kind of fueled this fire and passion?
And that was still my favorite finish line to date, because I think until you do it or until you cross the finish line, there's this sort of question mark on the distance, right? Because there's no real one day in practice where you're swimming 1.2 miles, then riding 56 miles, and then running a half marathon. It's in pieces, and you know that you're doing good work, and you do feel that you're in shape, but until you're out there doing it, and until you cross the finish line, you don't know what the day is going to bring. I mean, we all know on any given day and any race, anything can happen. And so that, I remember getting to that finish line being like, I did it, you know, and I finished, and I, you know, finished strong, and I felt strong. And, you know, when you brought up Worlds, because none of that was really on my radar ever. It was just this kind of fire. I was like, what is, you know, I feel like somebody on the Tried Out Facebook group had been talking about, you know, Worlds or whatever. And I remember kind of like, how do you qualify? What is that even? And I remember thinking it'd be like, oh, well, that would be very cool to do one day, you know, or it would be cool for someone to go besides me. So when you brought it up, I was like, oh, okay, pressure, but let's do that. And I think I was really naive because I was pretty new, honestly, to the sport. I mean, when I first did it back in 2012, I had no heart rate monitor. I had no power. I had no real idea of aerobically what I was doing or where my thresholds were. And even when I resumed kind of this and started working with you, I really didn't understand watts per kilogram or what that meant on the bike or thresholds and on the run or, you know, my VO2 max and what that meant was possible and how you can put all those things together. And so I guess I didn't really understand all of that until you have to kind of be in it and just learn it one thing at a time.
Because not too long after Steelhead, you then went to Ohio and you did 70.3 Ohio that year. No, you did Michigan.
I did Steelhead and then I did Michigan Titanium. Right. Was my second ever half Ironman because I thought I should probably do another one before World.
And that was in St. George in 2020.
And that was in St. George in 2021. Yeah. And that was an amazing race. I mean, we had the crazy storm and crosswinds. And I think from a, like a self-assurance standpoint or sort of a growth standpoint, that was a big race for me because I kind of went into it. I remember telling Matt, like, well, if I'm somewhere, you know, even in the middle, right? Or, you know, somewhere in the middle third, that would be awesome. And I also don't think I have or never thought that I had great bike handling skills. That's one of those things that always makes me nervous. But to be caught in those big crosswinds and to handle that and to maneuver through the day and finish successfully, I think that was one of those races that really then was like, okay, I'm in it and I'm here. And I like, this is not like a one and done year. I'm in it. So.
Yeah, actually. So the St. George race was a pretty unique experience. It'd be kind of fun just to hear what it was like for you on that day. Cause I know a lot of people heard that it was bad weather, but do you want to just share kind of the story of your actual race on that day? Because it is so unique and kind of crazy and exciting at the same time.
Yeah. So race morning was actually gorgeous, you know, and we had had pretty good weather. It wasn't too hot. I was like, okay. And we got out on the bike and I remember the course changed between the first year I did it and then last year when you guys were there, but we had this little out and back section. And I remember thinking like, wow, I'm going fast this direction. And then I did the turnaround. And it was just black skies. That's all I could see. And then you could start to see lightning over the hills. And then all of a sudden you're going like 10 miles an hour slower because there's this headwind that you're coming into. And then we made this turn and the rain, hail started coming down and literally tumbleweeds coming across the road and crazy, crazy crosswinds to the point that at one point I unclipped and rode unclipped on my right foot for a little while because I saw people being almost like thrown. And I'm a fairly small person for people who don't know that. And I was like, well, at least if I get thrown, I have a possibility of like catching myself with that foot. And it was funny because it's obviously world championships. You know, you're out there with all these women in your age group and we're looking at each other saying, this is crazy. How long are we going to stay out here? This is, they're going to have to call it. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to go as hard as I can for as long as I can until they call it, because I don't know if they're going to restart us another day, if this is just how we're going to finish Worlds and this is my opportunity. So I'm going to, because a couple of people I saw, some people stopped. Some people obviously did crash or lose their bikes. And I just was like, I'm going to keep riding. And it was wild seeing the lightning and the wind over. And then we started this hail. And I remember I had thankfully like full aero helmet. And some people just had a regular helmet and glasses or no glasses. And I remember being so thankful that this hail couldn't pelt me in the face. People were getting hit hard. And I remember it hitting the side of my lip at one point. I'm like, this is terrible. And then we made another turn and some woman, I want to say she was from Mexico or something on the back of her jersey, but she was from another country. And she yelled to some of us who were kind of just going steady, maybe taking breaks from pedaling when we were unsure of the weather. And she yelled at us, don't stop pedaling. Don't, just keep pedaling. And I remember it was just a really cool experience to be out there with all these other sort of women who you're supposed to be competing with, but who are also lifting you up. And then I just got suddenly super happy. And I could see the sun coming over the edge of the mountains. I was like, they're not going to stop us, actually. We're finishing this thing. And I was like, basically singing. It's just really, really, it was like this crazy kind of little bit of time. But I feel like in those moments, you really grow as an athlete. So.
You're giving me a lot of optimism. On Sunday, there's a chance of thunderstorms for Happy Valley. So
it's a chance for growth.
I'm hoping they do not cancel it and we grow through the experience.
Just keep pedaling. Just keep pedaling.
I just heard it, right?
Do not stop pedaling. Yeah. And I think it was the same as getting in the water for the cold, cold weather that we had Jillian starting this year.
Oh, yeah.
I think there is something so remarkable and so inspiring when you look around and it's like all these like, bad ass, pardon my language, late women out there. And we're working hard. We're rooting for each other. And we're all going to do this crazy thing, whether it's riding through a storm, jumping in water when it's 34 degrees out, like we're all here doing it. And to me, that just like fires me up.
I agree 100% on that mindset, because I remember when it's pouring down rain, I'm going to train inside. But on race day, you show up and you're looking at everybody else and you're like, game on, let's do this.
Yeah. And I think there has to be this little thing on race day where you have to believe like everybody else's hard day can be your good day, right? And that you can like be mentally strong enough or whatever it is to have sort of be stronger than maybe what everybody else is. Or if everybody else is worried, that's to your advantage. And, and I think that comes with time and doing those kind of crazy things.
Yeah. I love your attitude that said, I'm going to ride as fast as I can. If you want to succeed, you have to react that way. It's awesome.
So 2021 was I consider a breakout year for you. That really set the tone, because I remember when we sat down and started looking at your 2022 race schedule and trying to pick races for you. You know, there was some pressure. You put pressure on yourself. And I remember telling you, like, listen, like, it's a new year. You're a new athlete. Don't compare. Rear view mirror. We're looking forward. 2022 was another great year for you. Do you want to talk about 2022 and then we'll kind of segue into where we currently are?
Sure. Yeah. So I 2022 was a great year. I did put pressure on myself, but I think a lot of us are just that way. Right. And I feel like we did some really good work, on the bike. My run was in a really good spot last spring. And for me, the thing that I'm proudest about is that it was a very like consistent performances, and I won't say that I had one like perfect race. Ohio was pretty good. I would say that I performed the way I wanted to perform, and is there always something that we're like reaching for next? Yes. But I was really happy to go out there and like find myself performing consistently and pushing myself for like that next thing every time. So, and obviously got to see you guys in St. George again, which is amazing. So I don't know. I guess I enjoyed finding myself sort of at the front of the pack and pushing for that and not letting the pressure put me in a negative space, but putting it in like a positive place for me where I liked it. I thrived on that a little bit, I think.
Yeah. One of the things that I always noted, and that you definitely, and some of the other, which I refer to as the top guns, some of the athletes that I coach that find themselves on the podiums regularly or find themselves at the front of the pack. And Jay, I think you'll agree on this, and Jillian as well, is that inherent mindset of never being satisfied. You know, you get done a race and it's like, you know, they may have finished second in their age group, first in their age group, third in their age group, second overall. And they always want to talk about not the positives, but they always want to say, this is what I should have done. And they're seeing the negatives only. I'm always sitting here going, enjoy yourself for 5 minutes before we start talking about the ugly. You know, I had that conversation over the weekend with one of the guys I coach. You know, I'm just like, dude, you just finished second age group, eighth overall at a race. It's like, let's celebrate the positive before you start pointing out every single negative thing. You know, that's a special breed and a special type of person when what they want to do is focus on the improvement and it's fresh in their mind versus the success that they had. And that's a hard job as a coach is to take. And I remember having those conversations many with you, Lauren. I remember having them with you, Jillian. I remember having them with other athletes I coach. And it's like, let's focus on the positive. And I think keeping your mind space and your head space there keeps you going. You know, it's okay to be thirsty, but you got to chew at the same time and enjoy what you're having, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's one thing last year. I remember my first year, I was very frustrated with recovery week. And like, I hated recovery week. I just wanted to get back to work and get better. And I think that is one thing last year where I just melted into recovery week. And I really let myself enjoy those weeks. And there was times like I was like, okay, well, my leg still feels tired, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to push that. And, you know, I think that that happens with time. But I think enjoying the work that I'm doing, whether even if it's a good bike training session, and really focusing on like, that was good, and let yourself be happy about that thing, you know, and not that there's still not improvements or things that you would fix or go back or wish you could do again, but enjoying kind of those little successes along the way also kind of keeps you happy.
And injuries will teach us that too, won't they?
Oh, they will. They will. Yes.
It's a good segue right there.
The elephant in the room.
Well, I will say, I mean, I remember last year, right after St. George at Worlds, you know, you started dealing with a little bit of a hamstring issue and we couldn't figure out what was causing it. We were running sensibly. There was not a volume issue. And, you know, a new bike was introduced and there was some saddle issues, perhaps, and saddle height and some other different things going on. I remember a big risk we took last year. Do you remember right before 70.3 Florida?
Yeah.
In December?
Clash Daytona. Yeah. Like no running. No running before Clash Daytona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we shut her down on the run for about 2 weeks leading into the race. And I said, this is going to be a risk. Let's see. If you can't run, you can't run. I remember telling you that. And you went in and I think you had a pretty darn good run that day, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. Despite the heat, it was hot there. And especially coming from Michigan in December, you know, you're not used to 80 and sunny on a black asphalt track. But yeah, I had a really steady run. And I think that is one of those learning things where you can trust yourself that you can back off or you can stop or you can let yourself recover and still go out there and perform, because there's all these other months and weeks of work kind of behind that. And yeah. Trusting yourself.
So much wisdom right there.
Yeah.
So much wisdom.
That takes time, because I ended up in the same position last year, right? And actually, so knowing Lauren, yours is after, you know, a change in bike fit. So just something for people to think about, because that's when mine came as well. I had just gotten a new, more aggressive bike fit. I had kept the intensity of the old fit and didn't allow my body the time to adjust to it. And next thing you know, I've got hamstring issues. And Matt had shut me down for 3 weeks before American Triple T. And that scared the heck out of it. I was like, okay, great. I'm going to be worthless. In fact, before the 70.3 distance, I was like, well, Matt, I'll see you at the end of the day because I'll be walking the whole thing. And your body, it does. It remembers all the time you've put in before that injury. And then you have to learn to respect shutting it off and knowing and trusting that when you need it, if you've done it properly, it'll be there for you. But it's a hard one to learn and to trust. And sometimes you do experience it to be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's good documentation that says 2 weeks is the point where you might start losing fitness. But I also think because we are consistently training, not only the fitness that you've gained with the other sports, but sometimes that recovery is what your body needed anyway be at peak performance. Yeah. And I think the pros prove it over and over again when they get shut down and then go run an Ironman and have their best performance ever, that we're always walking the edge all the time, that sometimes that force break is exactly what the doctor ordered.
Tim O'Donnell did that at Kona, right? Took second coming off months of not running. And it was like, I would just tell me, well, T.O. did it. So, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I always like to say to athletes all the time is the body can only absorb so much.
Right.
We carry around so much residual fatigue all the time with us that do we really ever feel good? We're underslept. We're probably undernourished. We're probably overtrained. And every athlete's going to be different. I play games with myself all the time where I try different things with myself before I try them with other people just to kind of see the effects that it has of, you know, adjusting volume here, adjusting intensity here, because it's trial and error. And I think there's no cookie cutter on any athlete. What works for Lauren and us shutting her down may not have worked for Jillian, which may not work for Jay. And I think that's getting to know the athlete and seeing how your body responds to that training and learning from that. One of the things I always do, and I know I always ask Lauren, it's like, how's the body feeling? Do you feel like if you feel like you need a rest day or feel like you need a, you know, miss a workout, like it's okay. Listen to what your body's telling you, you know, because you can't take the miles off once they're on.
Yeah.
And I would say sometimes it's not just about listening to your body because I honestly think that's a learned thing. I know people will say that right off the bat, but I truly, if someone would have told me that before, it doesn't mean anything because I don't actually know how to listen to my body because sometimes I'll be like, well, don't go run. And I'm like, well, no, you're just like, no, we're going to go run. And I was just fine afterwards. Right. So like truly listening, it's more, you really have to learn how to, don't be afraid to take a chance at, especially if you're injured or pending injury. Take a chance and err on the side of precaution and less could be more. And I think you just have to, you do have to test that with yourself, but trust yourself or trust your body enough and test it, right? Test it, but test it conservatively versus aggressively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that rolls us into, Lauren, where you currently are.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're dealing with now?
Sure.
And kind of, I know you and I shared a lot of tears, a lot of headaches, a lot of patience, a lot of late conversations, and a lot of what ifs and a lot of whatabouts together over the past several months. So
I honestly came off last season like feeling pretty good. We took the month of December off of running basically to kind of help fix whatever high hamstring glute thing and started getting back into it around the new year. And honestly, I was feeling good. I was nailing stuff. I felt strong. And I don't know exactly what started it, and even looking back, it's hard for me to imagine that I had any preceding symptoms that I wasn't paying attention to. But I woke up, actually, it's February 10th, I know the warning, to go, it was, you know, 4:45. I walk into the kitchen to get ready for morning master swim practice, and I had this horrific chest pain. And I remember like kind of stopping in the middle of the kitchen, wondering, am I having a heart attack? This is like a pulmonary embolism. And obviously I work in cardiology. So I'm looking at like, my heart rate on my watch and my O2 sats and everything is fine. I'm like, no, this is definitely like musculoskeletal. And then I thought, maybe did I strain something? Did I just sleep funny? Like, I'm 41 now, so weird things happen in the middle of the night and you wake up broken. And so my initial thought was, you maybe shouldn't go to swim practice. And then my next thought was like, well, maybe it'll be good to just go stretch it out. Like, if there's some weird spasm, like Jillian said, you should go just check this out. And I remember swimming and it being kind of uncomfortable, but not prohibitive. And then the pain just never went away. And I kept waiting for it to just kind of disappear in the same way it showed up, which was randomly and in the middle of the night. And over weeks, days, it just didn't. And it got worse. And I was still trying to do workouts because I thought it's just like maybe costochondritis, some general inflammation. I went through, you know, Medrol dose pack. I did get an echocardiogram here at my office. I actually went to see a physical medicine rehab doc who, you know, anyway, he told me I should work on taking some deep breaths. I think everybody kind of thought, well, it's just because you're always going so hard and that you're just stressed out mentally, physically, or whatever, and that you just need to just kind of back off. And I tried doing that. I mean, Matt knows I took like a week off doing nothing. We did some weeks where it was just completely Z2, easy aerobic stuff. I stopped swimming with my arms because that got painful and I was just trying to kick workouts. I got an x-ray of my lungs and they didn't really see anything there. I got a CAT scan and they didn't see anything there. And then finally I got an MRI it actually showed, chronic fracture of my sternum with non-union of segments. And the reason I got the MRI, because it got so bad that it was to a point where I couldn't change laundry. I mean, my son gave me a sucker and I went to take it from like his hand and reach across my body to put it in a baggie. And I just broke down in tears because my entire chest would go into this spasm. I was listening to it now is like absurd that I was even trying to do anything, but I was taking two Aleve in the morning, two Aleve at night. I was taking Roboxin, like a muscle relaxer at night. I had icy hot patches on my chest at all times. I was sleeping, sitting up. And I distinctly remember waking up in the middle of the night occasionally at like 3 a.m. and walking to the kitchen to get more Aleve because I couldn't hear anything. It's almost like you couldn't see because all you could feel was pain. And I will tell you, it was the most painful thing that worse than childbirth. And it was just ongoing. It was relentless. I mean, there was very few periods of time where I would be in a place where I was not uncomfortable. And I started, I think, almost getting like depressed, you know? And I remember walking into the kitchen in the middle of one of those nights thinking like, I can't live like this. You know, like no wonder people with chronic pain are so thankfully working in healthcare, I got the MRI. And then once I had a diagnosis, it was like, okay, like this is terrible, but I'm not crazy either. And I got in to see a sports doc, which was another whole trip in itself because nobody's secretary wanted to make me an appointment because they don't treat those. And trauma didn't want to see me. They said, maybe go see a cardiothoracic surgeon. They didn't really want to see me. So I finally got in to see a sports doc. And he was like, I looked at your Strava and you worked out 5 times last week. I was like, well, I didn't know what this was. And
private.
Yeah. So he said, you just have to do nothing for 6 weeks. And that meant even everything around the house. I mean, it was already to the point where I couldn't do a lot, but I couldn't put dishes away. I couldn't do laundry. I couldn't make beds, anything, pushing, pulling, reaching, holding. I couldn't move my arm across my chest without pain. And really nobody had a whole lot to offer me as far as management or recovery. But they said, if this doesn't get fixed right, if it doesn't heal, then they basically have to go in and like wire your sternum because you can't walk around with, you know, a broken sternum and it's already been this way for however long. So I did look into PEMF therapy, which is like a pulsed electromagnetic therapy and cold laser therapy, both of which are supposed to help with inflammation, bone growth, and all those things. Obviously, insurance doesn't cover that. So, but I had to do something because I felt like I can't just sit around for 6 weeks and hope for the best. Like, you know, you have to sort of put yourself into this position. So I maxed out protein, calcium, vitamin D, iron supplements, you know, 100 ounces of water a day. I was on like the 75 hard, but without working out. And, you know, just did everything, 8-9 hours of sleep a night. And I did everything that I could, knowing that I couldn't do what I really wanted to do, which was work out. Eventually, we added in some recumbent bike. So it was me and these 80-year-olds. Because it's not like you're walking around with a cast or a foot brace. There's literally nothing they can give you. So you look normal. You're just sitting there taking up space on their recumbent bikes. You know, over time, I did notice an improvement. You know, by week four, I was like, okay, you know, and I was sleeping better. I was sleeping through the night. I was taking muscle leave. I wasn't eating muscle relaxers. And, you know, I started adding in some stair climber. And then by the time I saw the doc week six, it still shows some like degeneration of the sternomaneuveral junction kind of there. I'll probably always have like some arthritis or, you know, not totally normal bone maybe. But it's in one piece. That's good. But then he just kind of cut me loose. He was like, well, okay, go ahead. And I was like, what do you mean go ahead? I don't know if you know what I was doing before, but you can't just go ahead. So, that's been, you know, me and Matt kind of corroborating and me being very honest about where I am physically with things, and not just as much as I wanted to jump back into training and I wanted to race steelhead and I wanted to do, you know, I had to keep kind of letting go, which is hard, right? You have this whole season planned and things you wanted to do. I had like a bike time trial race in the spring. I wanted to go hammer. I just little things that you have planned for yourself that you kind of visualize yourself working for. And then you just slowly have to keep letting those things go because you're just not in a place that you can do them. And, you know, Grand Rapids Triathlon, I really wanted to do. And I was like, okay, not ready yet. And, you know, finally started swimming more and more. And I'll be honest, there was a time where I thought I'll never swim again. That's how it felt. Or that I will never be able to do a push-up again. I don't know when I'll be able to do a dip or a lat pull down or, you know, any of those things, or pick up my kids. And so thankfully, over, you know, the last, you know, I guess 6 weeks or so here, I've been building back and we've been, I think, doing it the right way. And wow. So I started doing some, I won't call them girl push-ups, but sort of adjusted push-ups on my knees. And I was like, all right, I did like 3 sets of 10. And, you know, I was like, okay, I felt good after that. The next day, no pain. Or I started slowly adding back in some swim yardage, and very slowly. And so just today, I actually did my first like actual swim workout where I wasn't wearing fins, wasn't kicking most of the workout, and was able to swim the yardage, pain-free. So, yeah.
Do you, in hindsight, have ideas of what triggered it and why it was so out of the random, out of the blue?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, everybody's brought up like, well, you're very small and maybe you had some reds or whatever. And I'll say like my periods were super regular. I thought, you know, and could I have been sort of on the border of reds? That's possible, I guess. But I feel like I was pretty cautious about making sure I had enough calories and that my weight was holding steady and that I was having a period every month. My Trek Speed Concept, you know, the handlebars had been recalled. And so that had taken to the shop, and I kept feeling like on my bike, like I was kind of scrunched and narrow. And I only vaguely remember kind of sitting up and stretching my arm against the wall a couple times, just kind of, I don't know, maybe it felt tight. So all I can think is that, you know, just being too scrunched in for those hours on the bike, or it was just like a fluke thing. The sports doc thought that maybe I had some congenital, where I was not fully fused congenitally there, and sort of prone to that irritation.
Interesting.
I mean, I swam all through high school. I mean, right now I swim like, I don't know,
I was swimming like 7,500 yards a week. In high school, we swam 10,000 yards in a day. So I can't believe if I was going to have, and I was definitely in reds in high school. I had like two periods a year. I was 90 pounds soaking wet.
Oh my God.
So if that was going to happen, I feel like from swimming or from overuse, it should have happened then. So I really, it's kind of a mystery. It's definitely a mystery. I just hope that it never happens again. And, you know, just paying a lot of attention to my body, like Jillian said, sometimes so hard to know.
Vernon, and not to get to too much like TMI, but I think that's actually a great point you mentioned, though, the fact that you know you had reds back in high school. I know I had reds back in high school myself as well. It's this competitive nature of the women in that time. I think that era, that was seen as a good thing.
We need to have a whole hour podcast.
We should.
Pass line to, because there are so many. Yeah. Anyway.
So when I had actually gone to see one of the PTs up here that specializes in running, he had asked about that in high school, because sometimes you can do permanent damage that you can't see that you can get by with, but it'll resurface itself a little bit easier. So he was actually wanting to keep an eye on me to make sure that I was having issue with my quad and hamstring not getting better after a particularly hilly half. And so he wanted to make sure that there wasn't some sort of stress fracture potentially, because I am going to be more prone to that having reds in high school, even though same as you, Claire, not in reds right now, you know, completely good cycles, all that stuff. So anyhow, something worked for other ladies out there that could be coming back into sport after maybe a competitive time in high school or something, and maybe having had reds or guys, et cetera, because reds is gender neutral. So
yeah.
I remember when Lauren and I first started talking about this, like I was dumbfounded because, you know, we're sitting there, the two of us looking at each other going, what caused this? Like how'd this happen? Like our swim volume, it's not, I mean, when you think triathlete stress fracture, for all practical reasons, that's what this was. You think ankle, knee, hip. And we're sitting here going, how the heck did you get a sternal stress fracture? I mean, it doesn't happen from running. It doesn't happen from cycling. It's not from being an aero. It's not from weightlifting. Swimming, you don't get a stress fracture from swimming. So we're sitting here rubbing our heads, and it was just like, okay, every triathlete, when you have a stress fracture, what do? You swim more. You put an athlete that has a stress fracture in their shin, their hip, because it's non-weight bearing, you get in the pool, you use a pool buoy, and you can maintain fitness. Well, the last place we could put her was the water.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of pulling through the water with your sternum. So I'm sitting here thinking, trying to get creative of, I got to keep her sane with exercise. And I'm trying also not to create too much vibration, because the vibration on the skeleton that we needed to be worried about, like on the upper body, we were like, okay, you can ride on your bike upright, but you cannot lean on the handlebars whatsoever. You basically have to sit erect and ride, or you can be on the recumbent bike and lean back. But we didn't want any rounding of the shoulders, extension of the back. It was crazy. I probably got on her nerves, because every workout, I'm like, did you feel anything? Are you feeling anything? Like, are you promised? And it's like, you got to be completely honest with me. I know there were times that was like, you did have to pull up a workout. And it was like, I was like that nervous parent, like first parent where you're like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, it's because you don't know what's happening. As a coach, the worst thing I ever want to do is have an athlete get injured. I do not feel good when my athlete gets injured. I take that personal, because I feel somewhat responsible for that injury. And it's just, I'm helping to design these plans. I'm helping to give them the intensities. And when they get injured, I feel responsible. And I mean, those that know me really well, it's like, I care. I'm very passionate about working with my athletes. And I mean, this was a hard one for both of us. I mean, you were coming in, had just gotten on Octagon, which was a huge thing for you. I knew you were very proud of that. And there's expectations with that. And I remember one of the things I kept telling you was, let other people's expectations go. And I remember having those talks, and I think, you know, we had more shrink sessions than training sessions sometimes together.
Yeah.
I remember you started texting and saying, hey, what do you think of this race this weekend? And I was like, Lauren, just be patient. I think every other day I was getting a message of, do you think I can go do this half marathon this weekend? Do you think I can go do this weekend? And I'm like, patience. And I'm like, she's going to get so tired of me saying no. But I think deep at the end of the day, you know, it's having your best interest.
Yeah. And I think it was definitely the right call to sort of build yourself back. I mean, obviously, it's one thing to be out for a couple of weeks, but it's a completely other thing to really be fairly inactive, you know, for 6 weeks. And, you know, you can't just jump right back into the intensities. And for me, even, you know, I think my bike fitness is coming around, but, you know, the run is still, you know, I feel like a little bit of struggle as far as getting like top end speed. And even on the bike, some of my top end power that I had, and those things I just have to be patient about. It's obviously a long season this year because I'm racing into December. And so there's plenty of racing coming down the pipeline and, you know, just to be excited about that and to be healthy. So
I was going to say, that's the thing we did was we shifted your season.
Yeah.
We basically took you from a long season to a more fall dominant. And I mean, one other thing I'm going to mention is you talked about running. How's that hamstring feeling right now?
It's better, man. It's gone.
100%. Right?
Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at. I think, Lauren, you want to do this for many more years. So get taking this break. It's really about those extra years you're going to put back in your career that you could have shortened if you kept going. And then it goes back to what we said about that 2 week break. Your body has fully recovered and you may have lost fitness of top end, but you're starting now from a strong body of those years of training being fully absorbed and being able to just build it right back. And it's going to come back quickly. And I bet you it comes back beyond where you were because you're
Yeah. And I think just being super mindful of all the recovery and keeping the protein high and hydration and sleep, because those are things, I mean, if we're all working or family stuff and all those things, and those are sometimes they shouldn't be the first thing that get left to the side, but often they are because we're so focused on the workout. But what I found is like, okay, you know, I read at night a lot. I think you guys know that, but I'm like, okay, 10:30 is like strict cutoff, right? If I only finish 50 minutes of my workout instead of the hour, that's it. I'm getting off the bike because I have to go to bed, right? Or I'll cut it 5 minutes early so that I can make sure I have my lacrosse ball and I kind of roll out my glute, my hamstring, and you know, all of those things, and make sure that I'm keeping myself healthy, because this is like a long-term thing. And you got to focus on all those little things as much as the big stuff.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, you could do a whole nother pod on just the mental aspect of being injured and coming back from injury. But I think, you know, Lauren, one of the posts that you had done that I think is really important is that in it, you seem to have been focused, like you had to shift your mindset of not what I can't do anymore. It's okay, but what can I do? Right. And so then you really focused on, you know, what can you be doing? Whether it was the strength training or, hey, recumbent bike, you're spinning the legs, right? At least you're doing something that's contributing to your base fitness, helping you heal in one area, but will better allow when you do come back, you to tap into, you know, maybe stronger, smaller muscles, right? And growth and improvement that you didn't think you would otherwise have even had.
Yeah, 100%.
That's one of the things that we definitely emphasize, because remember our control talk? I challenged her and I kept saying, I said, listen, you like having control. I said, right now you can't control this. I said, the only thing you can control is your reaction and what you do to make yourself better. And I said, put your control in not letting yourself do the things that can create more harm. You can control that. So you got to choose not to do these things. You can control all those other things. Let's change the mindset and get this, the head, back to the positive side of what, not what can I do, but what can I do? Jillian, exactly what you were saying.
But it seems to be on the road to recovery. And, you know, I mean, this is anybody going through an injury. I mean, we're all pushed, like Jillian said, I think at the beginning, you know, we're all sort of finding our edge or kind of riding that line all the time. And that's sort of the nature of the beast when, you know, you're trying to do you know, several half Ironmans in a year or a full and a few halves, you are pushing your body to its limit. And eventually it'll tell you that you found it and you need to back off. And I think listening to that and being respectful, and then also like post-race or post-season and having those little breaks where you really allow yourself the luxury of full recovery without feeling guilty or like you should be doing something or you want to be doing something. There's like a time to build and there's definitely a time to rest and relax.
Can't get fruit from the tree year round.
That's right. I'm going to try.
Matt's going to keep going here. More quotes.
I just want to do a real quick, we got an opportunity for a public service announcement with someone in cardiology.
Oh, sure.
I mean, triathlon has its heart risks. You know, we hear about the awful stories of people during a swim or at a race that pass, because most of the time, I think it ends up becoming a heart issue. What can you remind all of us? I know there's some symptoms. What can you tell triathletes not to ignore?
Yeah.
And go get checked out and be sure that you don't have a hidden problem that's going to end your day and your life.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously a lot of us wear chest straps. So we have a pretty good idea on where our heart rates run. If you're working out and you notice sort of weird spikes in your heart rate where it's going up quickly, suddenly sustaining, especially if it's accompanied by increased shortness of breath or a symptom of palpitations or lightheadedness, you know, those are signs that you could be having an arrhythmia that needs management or treatment. Because what you don't want to have happen is all of a sudden you go into, let's say, an SVT and the heart rate's 200 and you're in the water. That's something that is treatable. You know, it's not, for most of us, maybe not like a life altering thing, but if you're also max effort and then you go into those kind of rhythms or some other arrhythmia, which could be potentially fatal. So if you notice those kind of things, also if you notice that, you're more short of breath doing the work that you, sort of are used to doing or level, and you notice an increased sensation of breath, then that would be something to potentially get evaluated. I will tell you, I had a guy who's run, I don't even know how many marathons, 20, 30, whatever. And he came to see us. His daughters made him come in because he had explained to them that he would have a breakthrough mile where he would get a little pain or pressure on his chest around mile 4 or 5. But don't worry, because if he just kept running, it would slowly go away. And he would basically run through this angina, you know, or cardiac pain. We put him on the stress test, and he had significant EKG changes on the treadmill, where it was quite apparent that there was something. He ended up needing a bypass. And so when you're fit, your body and your cardiovascular system will tolerate many things that many other people would maybe come to the doctor a little sooner for. We're used to being somewhat uncomfortable sometimes. We're pushing through things. And also we're fit enough that our body will kind of do workarounds, right? And it'll adapt or sort of hedge its bets and try to kind of get through what it needs to get through. But those are huge things that you do, you know, you should pay attention to. And it's just because you're fit doesn't mean you can't have cardiac disease. You know, unfortunately, there's many other, obviously aerobic fitness is great for everybody, but there's many other reasons to develop heart disease, whether it's, you know, genetics or you have type 1 diabetes and you're an athlete or anything like that. And so, you know, just another marker of listening to your body and watching for those signs and symptoms, because they're pretty easy things for us to track down and figure out for you.
The genetics, you can't outrun genetics.
Sadly,
right?
No.
I mean, that, yeah. Tim O'Donnell is a great example of that. The idea that you can be super fit, that if you have genetics, if your family history has cardiac issues, you need to be really vigilant, because you will not outrun it.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you know, some people have familial sort of high cholesterol, and they assume, well, I'm an athlete, so I'm not going to take a cholesterol pill. And that doesn't work that way. So you have to just make sure you're on the right treatments and therapies. And we did actually have a a multi-Ironman finisher come see us. He had a sudden cardiomyopathy where his heart got weak. He was doing pretty strict keto diet and also still doing some really intense training. And it's no different than getting a stress fracture or getting into REDS. I mean, the body's going to tell you when you've sort of pushed, and not having any carbs is not always the best thing. I mean, there's a time and a place, but he's definitely, you know, thankfully recovered and back to normal, and the heart recovered nicely. But even when you're the picture of physical fitness, you know, that doesn't always mean that the heart is healthy. Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm gonna plead to the men, because I know there's some women that may need to hear this, but men, don't joke about it. Get to the doctor, okay? Don't ignore it. Get to the doctor. I think there's a lot of us that are really stubborn when it comes to these pains that we should probably make
a yeah. Call. And even if you have just a family history or you're worried about risk factors, and as active as we are, there's no reason not to go in and get a check, get an EKG, or have somebody put you on the treadmill. Or, you know, there's great cardiac CAT scans where we can actually see the arteries of your heart and just be like, hey, your arteries are clear, everything is good. Or, you know, some pretty easy testing that we have nowadays that will give you so much information.
I'll share a little story. I don't really have a family history. We have high blood pressure, but I went to the cardiologist and just told the cardiologist that I didn't feel I could be objective about what I feel when I'm exercising, exactly how you described, Lauren, with we know how to tolerate pain. I've had chest pain similar to what you were describing with your sternum, you know, and it was pulled muscle in the pec or whatever. And I had to really plead with the cardiologist to, will you please check this out? Because I am stressing about it. It is impacting my quality of life. And it took convincing a cardiologist when I have no family history, but I'm a triathlete, all of those things. He didn't want to give me the calcium score test. You know, he thought ethically it wasn't right to send me to get it. But I eventually convinced him that it was depleting my mental health, not knowing. I needed to know. And I only offer that as tips and tricks. I hate to say that sometimes you have to work with your medical provider to mm-hmm. convince yeah. them that, can you just, for peace of mind, bury this?
You know, yeah. And I mean, I work in healthcare, and I can't tell you how difficult getting to the bottom of what I had was. And the only reason I got in to see the sports doc that I got into is because I messaged him on our like private physician messaging app to say, this is what's going on. And because the secretaries weren't making me an appointment because they don't see somebody for this. And I even called U of M, actually sports medicine, not to dig on U of M, for a second opinion, you know, after he kind of cut me loose, or to just kind of make sure that I was on the right track with everything. And they would not make me an appointment. They were not interested. And so you have to advocate for yourself. And if that means like going to the bat over and over and kind of just keep pushing to get the testing, I mean, that's what I had to do, is just kind of go through a million different tests, same as you, Jay, is just kind of keep pushing and advocating for yourself. And that's not an easy thing to do, especially for somebody who is, you know, otherwise healthy, and you think, well, okay, fine. But that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time to do that. I hope that it helps somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure it will. Anything else you'd like to share, Lauren?
Oh, wow. No, I mean, thank you guys for having me on. I feel like I'm just kind of chatting for sense.
This will be great.
Really, yeah, super exciting. And I am obviously looking forward to the season. I'm super happy to be healthy. And, you know, in some ways, I think it's maybe a blessing in disguise to have a good base and ready to get there. I thankfully with Octagon, we have some amazing sponsors this year. And I got some new equipment I got to test out here in the next few weeks.
What's what is anything allowed to be scheduled yet?
Ohio will be my first big race. I'm gonna do a local sprint just to kind of shake off the cobwebs here next weekend, actually. So I'm excited to kind of test my speed a little bit, and for me, I feel like it's just kind of one of those things, you gotta shake yourself back into race season and that mindset and that hunger a little bit. And that I'm excited to do that before Ohio, and then obviously see what Ohio holds. It's a great course. It can, obviously last year it was super hot. It was like 90 degrees and humid. But I do usually okay in that kind of environment, thankfully. And so we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
That'll be a sweet finish
line. Oh, yeah, it will be, because there are, I will say there is definitely times Matt knows I cried like, I'm done, I'm broken, and I'll never be in one piece again. And I, there was definitely that fear there. So it feels really good to be healthy and looking forward.
Well, Lauren, thank you for coming on, sharing your story, just kind of your rise and, you know, your struggles, obviously, and your successes and with dealing with injuries and just being very transparent. So I'm going to tell you, if you're out there racing and you're at any of the races that Lauren's doing, be looking over your shoulder because she's going to be coming for you. I promise. The girl is
so, Matt,
tasty. Yes.
You're probably not going to be looking over your shoulder because she's going to be one of the first out of the water. So yeah. I know this.
I just know she's thirsty for that finish line. Lauren, it's going to be exciting to watch you finish this year strong and get back out there doing what you love. And I can't thank you enough for being patient and allowing your body to heal so you can get out there and do what you're capable of and race to your full potential.
Thank you. Well, and thank you for the guidance and, you know,
yeah,
well, and all of you guys for the chat today. So it was awesome.
Yeah. But,
absolutely.
All right. Jay, what do you say? Wrap us up. Bring us home, man.
Oh, sure. Thanks again for listening to the Triathlon Age Group Journey. If you want to reach out to us, find us on Instagram at the Triathlon Age Group Journey and on email, triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com. And if you think about it and could take some time and put a rating in your favorite podcast platform, we'd love to hear from you as well. And give us some ideas of what you'd like to hear about on the podcast. So we're having a lot of fun. Can't believe we're at episode 29, and I can't believe it's July.
Yeah. So
where has the year gone?
One more quick thing, Jay. Race amazingly well this
weekend.
Oh. Have fun. Race Thanks, smart. Guys. Race from the heart. And go out there and give those boys some hell, man. All right.
You bet. I'll be hopefully figuring it out. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye.
Have a great 4th of July. Be safe.
Yeah. Take care, guys.
USA.